The name of the new book is XL Love, How the Obesity Crisis is Complicating America's Love Life. And it's a great pleasure to welcome Sarah Varney to the roundtable. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Sarah is a senior health policy correspondent with Kaiser Health News. Her stories air regularly on NPR and the PBS NewsHour and appear in the New York Times and the Washington Post. And again, the new book is XL Love. What brought you to the subject?
A couple years ago, we did a series at NPR that was called Living Large, and the idea was to really look at how, now that 2 out of 3 Americans are overweight and obese, how is life in America changing? And as a health reporter, I had done a lot of stories looking at diabetes and hypertension. I had done one particular story about this young girl. She was 13, 14 years old, and she was trying to qualify for a drug trial for a weight loss drug, a new weight loss drug at UCSF in San Francisco. And I think when I left those interviews, I was always really struck by how we weren't really asking, well, what's going on in your life? You know, you're a 13, 14-year-old girl. Do you want to be dating at school? Or you're in your 20s and you're out in the dating market. What's life like for you when you go do that? Or in your marriage, if you've got somebody who's quite heavy, how does that affect the relationship in the marriage? So we ended up doing a story that became the basis for the book that looked at these two couples and really just explored what role weight played in their marriages.
In relationships in general. Right. In our personal relationships, and yes, ultimately in our marriages and in our intimate relationships.
Absolutely. Yes. It was human relationships. So romantic relationships, sexual relationships, that sort of thing.
As far as the idea, I guess you have to say, OK, how is this then different? How does this differ than the complexities of any human relationship?
Absolutely. I mean, what I do is I start the book really looking at how weight affects puberty and pubertal development. So we know, for instance, that weight is one of the most important factors in when girls begin puberty and boys as well. And what we know is that puberty is happening at much earlier ages now in the United States. So among girls by the age of 7, about 25% of African American girls are beginning to develop breasts by the age of 7, about 15% of Latinos and about 10% of whites. So by 7 years old, puberty is already beginning. This is a new thing in the United States. I mean, this was not the case 20, 30, 50 years ago. So what I look at is really how weight is affecting the pubertal process. But then what does that mean for these girls, for instance, who are now 7 or 8 years old, who are developing these sort of more adult bodies, and how people end up treating them differently, right? I mean, in their own families, their uncles, their parents, but also out on the street, walking through their neighborhoods or at school. And these girls in particular, you know, they're still 7 years old. Developmentally, right. They're not caught up to their bigger bodies. And there's a lot of concern among pediatricians and pediatric endocrinologists that this sets these girls up for increased rates of sexual abuse, which we know. We know that a much earlier age of puberty leads to higher risk for sexual abuse, for instance. We know in boys that one of the things that they're seeing in a place like Mississippi, where I start the book out, is boys who are bigger are not just developing fat, but actual breast tissue. And we know that being obese for women significantly increases your risk for breast cancer. We don't really understand yet what the effect is on boys with this type of breast tissue. So I felt like it was important to start the book off looking at how weight is really affecting physical development, but then really looking at, okay, then how does it affect those sort of first romantic and sexual experiences that adolescents have? And then we sort of move forward, you know, into the 20s and 30s and then into marriage after that.
Do you see a difference in people who become obese as opposed to people, to children and the youth obesity issue?
Well, we know that children who are obese are almost guaranteed to be obese as adults.
Right.
Between 80 to 90%, depending on if you're talking about boys or girls, will be obese as adults. We know that if you're obese as an adolescent, there's some pretty significant consequences in terms of your own types of romantic and sexual experiences. So, for instance, obese girls are much less likely to have a first sexual experience. They're much less likely to have a first romantic experience. And so they end up going into adulthood, going off to college or their first jobs as, you know, 18, 19, 20-year-olds without the sort of base of those puppy love experiences, which are actually, when you talk to adolescent psychologists and development experts, are, you know, very important in terms of creating those building blocks for having successful adult relationships. So while as parents, we may look at some of these relationships and think, oh, this is just kind of silly. You know, they started dating the first bell and it ended at the end of school. But that's how we sort of learn to communicate and talk about what we need and what we want and set boundaries. And so one of the concerns is for a lot of these girls in particular who are not having those kinds of experiences when they're teenagers, what does that set them up for as adults? We also know that while it is more likely that girls who are obese are not having romantic and sexual experiences, the ones that do have much riskier sexual experiences. And particularly among morbidly obese girls, we know that they are much more likely to have multiple sex partners by the time they're done high school. They're much more likely to not use contraception. And they're much more likely to practice kind of riskier sexual behaviors as well.
Why is that the case?
Well, when you talk to the girls themselves, but also to the adolescent psychologists that work with them, they would say that obese girls are aware that they don't have a lot of negotiating power, that they don't necessarily want to miss an opportunity. You know, somebody's paying attention to them, even if it's the wrong kind of attention, that they're likely to say yes. We know that morbidly obese girls, for instance, also are much more likely to use alcohol before they become sexually active, actually about four times more likely to be using alcohol or drugs before they engage in sex. And this is disconcerting because, of course, anybody who's a parent knows that, or themselves knows that you tend to sort of do more, if you will, when you're in that kind of state.
I want to get back to my earlier question in talking about obesity and youth obesity, but is it different when an individual perhaps is at a healthy weight when they are an adolescent, they go through those normal passages of life and becomes obese through time? Are we talking about a radical difference, or are there still the similarities?
Well, what I would say is that if you have been obese as you were when you were a teenager, you're entering your early adult years without some of those cumulative experiences. So
Right. You
are, in a sense, and you hear from some of the characters in the book who essentially say, I just don't feel prepared to kind of negotiate these adult relationships. If you had been sort of a, quote, normal weight when you were younger and you had those experiences, you're certainly better off as you start out adulthood, because at least you've had some of those experiences. We know that when people get married, they tend to gain weight. And so one of the things I was interested in was, what was sort of the best pairing, if you will, for a, quote, happy relationship? Was it, you know, if both people were slender, both people were overweight, what was the pairing? And it was interesting because for a long time, social scientists really couldn't answer this question. There were studies that were kind of all over the map. There was a few studies that showed that overweight women reported being very happy in their marriages. There was actually one woman who was quoted from upstate New York in this one particular study who said, I'm married now, pass the pie, please, right? It's that idea, like,
right.
Okay, finally, we've found our match. We don't have to try so
fat
hard.
Fat and happy.
You know, but more that, you know, it's been a struggle to kind of keep my weight down while I was trying to date. Now I'm finally married. I don't have to worry about those things so much.
Right.
But what they ended up finding was that when they looked at the comparison between the husband and the wife, that what mattered more was that the husband simply just be more overweight than the wife. It didn't actually matter if she was thin or he was thin. It simply mattered that he was heavier in a sense than she was. And those seemed to be the relationships where couples reported being the happiest.
Of course, a lot of this has to do, there is, and you talk about this in the book, but we're talking about many components here. We're obviously talking about science. We're obviously talking about psychology. We're talking about the issues of why people would have an eating disorder in the first place, why people would be obese, whether that's psychological or whatever reasons are driving that person to that type of behavior. So yes, you look at them and you can say, okay, this is a thin person and this is how they react, and this is an obese person and this is how they react. But there's a lot of other ingredients that go into that to be discussed, correct?
Sure, absolutely. I mean, I think that when you're looking at these relationships, you know, obviously a family is an ecosystem, and it kind of comes to depend on how the husband and the wife are sort of in relation with one another. And there's many factors, of course. I mean, a lot of these studies do try and control for some of that. So if you're looking at, for instance, rates of depression among people who are obese, they will control for factors like economic adversity or the number of parents in the home or parental education level. So, you know, and I try and talk about that in the book with each study in terms of, you know, what's controlled for and what's not, so that we can try and drill down and say, okay, what specifically can be linked to weight in this case versus something else?
Is it different than another unhealthy activity, such as, say, smoking?
Well, I'm not sure how to answer that. I mean, we certainly know that smoking and increases risks for all sorts of things, as obesity does. But I think in terms of weight, you know, particularly for women, but also for men, there's plenty of male characters in the book. You know, you're right in that it is, for many folks, it is such a deep psychological issue for them. You know, it's something that they grew up with. They remember being teased, or they remember gaining weight after their first child. And it becomes not just simply a characteristic, I'm overweight,
right,
just as I have blonde hair or I have brown eyes or whatever. It becomes, you know, I'm a moral failure, right? And that's how the world treats them. I mean, we treat people who are obese as if they have morally failed. And I think this has been one of, as a person who grew up with a morbidly obese grandmother and saw the way that the world treated her, you know, it is no wonder that obese people have higher rates of depression. It's no wonder that, you know, they often feel isolated. It's no wonder that when we look at friendship networks, for instance, among teens, that obese teenagers and even overweight teenagers tend to have fewer friends. Still, I mean, this is what I found really interesting, is that we have 2 out of 3 Americans now who are overweight or obese, and yet the stigma and discrimination against overweight people has not really budged, as far as I can tell from looking at the research.
I found that interesting because it's not a minority.
Absolutely. And what's interesting is, even just to try and sort of look at this, a couple economists looked at girls who were at, quote, heavy girls who were at, quote, heavy schools. So these were schools where the population of students tended to skew heavier,
right,
versus girls at lighter schools. And while we found that
I can't believe they have those characteristics, those labels, but okay.
Well, but, you know, this is because we want to know this, right? It's like, if you're in a, because this is part of the reason why I went to Mississippi, was I was curious, you know, if you're in a place where, when you look around in high school and the vast majority of kids are heavy, are overweight or
yes,
obese, you would think that it would kind of temper the social isolation and the discrimination and those sorts of things.
But how do you identify a heavy school versus a light school?
Well, you just, I mean, actually, there's great data on this. I mean, you can basically look at the BMIs of the kids who go to the school, and you
okay,
can see, you know, what percentage are in the 99th percentile, you know, for kids in the 10th grade or 11th grade or whatever, however you want to do it.
All right.
So that's actually fairly easy to figure out. A group of economists asked this really interesting question. They wanted to know if overweight and obese girls who attend schools with lots of heavy peers are less likely to engage in risky sex than heavy girls who might stick out more at so-called light schools. And what they found was that heavy girls at both heavy schools and light schools did indeed engage in riskier sexual behavior. But the heavy girls who were at the, quote, heavy schools, it was mitigated somewhat, but not by much. And this is what I think is surprising, is that you would look around and you'd think, well, you know, a lot of the kids at my school are heavy, and so therefore it wouldn't really play a role anymore. It would just become the norm. But we find, even at those schools, that type of risky sexual behavior that I described earlier is still showing up.
The name of the book is XL Love, How the Obesity Crisis is Complicating America's Love Life. Our guest this morning is Sarah Varney. When you look at the data as far as if someone is in a long-term committed relationship, how much does it depend if both partners are obese versus, because I assume there's data on this as well, where one partner is obese and the other is not?
Yeah, so the mixed weight couples is how the researchers refer
okay,
to that, are certainly the ones where we find the most problems. The way researchers study this is really fascinating. You know, they'll recruit a number of people for these studies, fairly large number. They'll give them diaries to record at home. How often do you speak to your spouse? What's the tenor of the conversation? What do you talk about? How often do you get into fights? Have you considered leaving your marriage? All sorts of things. These are diaries. They'll even sometimes set up videotapes or videos so that they can video couples as they're having these conversations. Sometimes they'll bring them into the laboratory and they'll give them a series of questions to talk about, some of which might include weight or sex or money. And then they videotape this, and then they sort of rate the quality, in a sense, of the conversation. And what they find is that in mixed weight relationships, particularly where the wife is overweight and the husband is not, you see much more arguments, But also, they're much more personal. You know, the arguments tend to be much more bitter, much more personal, more explosive. So mixed weight couples seem to be the most challenged when it comes to this.
You wrap up in the book and talk about weight loss and what the future can be if you lose the weight, and with not only diets, but also surgery and surgical alternatives to lose the weight. This is sort of new, and you get the sense in reading the book that that picture on this isn't completely known yet.
I think a lot of people who are very heavy go into bariatric surgery and believe that all of their problems are going to go away if they lose weight. All of the arguments that they have with their husbands and with their kids, problems they have at work, certainly a lot of the physical problems that they might have will be can be resolved.
Right.
We know people who have bariatric surgery, within days of the surgery, diabetes goes away, swelling in their legs goes away, all sorts of things can people can really benefit from it. But we meet this one character in the book named Dana, and she decides to have bariatric surgery. And she is really surprised at how it doesn't have that effect with her and her husband. And she's, you know, confronts him at one point and says, you know, when are you going to sort of start noticing me again? And he looks at her and says, I just stopped reading your signs. I mean, it's been so long since I've seen you in that way that I just have to relearn all of that. So they actually go to marriage therapy and counseling and really start talking about this. Like, how are we going to restart our relationship now? As I said, you know, marriage is this ecosystem. And when one partner changes, it does sort of upset the apple cart. But then the family and the couple has to sort of refigure out how they're going to relate to one another.
We hear about very similar factors, and I was thinking about that in reading the book, that we hear very similar factors when economic concerns are pointed as a trouble in a marriage, and through some reason those economic concerns are lessened, there's still the core issues that are present, and money doesn't buy happiness.
Absolutely. I mean, all these problems don't go away. You don't all of a sudden start earning more money simply because you lost weight, or
right.
You know, the mortgage payment still has to be paid. The kids still don't want to do their homework. So all of those things are still there. And I think people who do go through significant weight loss have to be really honest with themselves and with their family about what their expectations are.
So the takeaway being what? At the end of the book, you want us to walk into the world and say, this is what we should be doing.
I think that the idea is to, it's not a self-help book. It's not meant to make recommendations. It's meant to simply say, when we talk about obesity in the United States, and when we talk about people who are heavy, we've tended to talk about them as, you know, a set of numbers, right? You know, how big, what's your weight? What's your BMI? What's your waist circumference?
Right.
And we haven't really asked them, how's your life like? What's your life like? How are your relationships like? What's your sex life like? This was a really an opportunity to kind of pull together all the social science, the medical research, but also these stories, just to say, here is my experience of what it's like to be an overweight or obese person in the United States today. And here's my story. And I will leave it up to the psychologists and the other experts to sort of decide, what do you do about that? I would certainly say that the couples that you see that are the most successful, or the individuals that are the most successful, are the ones that are really willing to do the work and really willing to look at, what is my relationship with food? What kind of life do I want to lead? How can I communicate better with my husband? I mean, all of the stuff that we know that's really important just to live a successful life in general is particularly important when it comes to weight, since it's such a physical and a mental and an emotional phenomenon.
In doing the work, meaning that you can still be heavy and have a happy life.
Absolutely. And you hear from this one man in the book, Eric Leckby, who he is very typical, right? His weight fluctuates constantly.
Right.
And we know that, you know, 90% of people who lose weight within 5 years gain it back,
right,
non-surgically. So Eric is this, I think, really interesting example of a very thoughtful man in his 40s who is saying, okay, how can I pull these things apart? How can I pull apart my sex life with my wife from my fluctuating weight? Because I know my weight is just constantly going to go up and down, but I want to continue to have a really solid relationship with my wife. And he talks really honestly about, he doesn't have the answer, but he's at least aware of it. And he says, you know, I think I'm going to struggle with this for a very, very long time. But I think at least through his story and sort of understanding that when those feelings start to rear up in him, you know, he starts to feel shameful about his body, or he starts to close down, that he's at least aware of it. Oh yeah, my weight's tipped up again 10 pounds or so. That's what's going on right now. I need to kind of be more gentle with myself, or I need to plan an outing with my wife, or, you know, she may need to give him special attention at that point to say, honey, I love you and I love you at any size. You know, there's things that couples can do if they're actually talking about it.
Do you think that the medical community, of whether it be an MD and a doctor that is looking at your physical condition, as well as the psychiatric and psychological community, is properly equipped to deal and guide people in these particular issues?
I would say physicians are not so much. You know, I think they would say, I'd only have 10, 15 minutes with my patients. I can barely get them to talk about their hypertension or their diabetes. I don't really necessarily have the time to go in to have a difficult oftentimes conversation about, well, what's going on with you at home, and how's your relationship with your husband? How's your sex life? You know, physicians, we know, don't talk about that. I write about that in the book. I would say certainly marriage and family therapists are very aware of this issue. And in fact, that was one of the very first things I did when I kind of had this idea for this story at NPR and then for the book, was I just called marriage and family therapists around the country, including a number of them up here in upstate New York, and said, what are you hearing from your clients, your patients? And they said, more and more weight is coming into the picture. You know, it's always been finances, it's always been sex, it's always been the kids. But now weight is very much at the top of a lot of couples' concerns. I don't know how to talk to my husband about the fact that he's gained a lot of weight, and you know, it's made me less sexually attracted to him. Or I feel terrible about myself because I'm heavy, or whatever the case may be. But marriage and family therapists, I think, are very much on the front lines of this, and trying to come up with strategies for how to help couples sort of either live at their current weight and be happier, or confront some of the medical and health issues that they are actually having, at the same time that they're dealing with some of their psychological and emotional needs.
The name of the book is XL Love, How the Obesity Crisis is Complicating America's Love Life. It is published by Rodale. Sarah Varney, thank you very much for spending time with us this morning. A great pleasure having you here.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Again, the title of the book is XL Love, published by Rodale. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.